You're with us for an hour-long recap and analysis on yesterday's Super Tuesday. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So it was the biggest voting day in the Democratic nomination process. 14 states, one territory held nominating contests for the Democratic Party candidate for president. And last night we saw former Vice President Joe Biden emerge as the clear counterweight to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. So were you surprised by the results? Do you see a two-way race between Biden and Sanders? Does this election feel like a potential rematch of 2016? Who are you voting for? We're at 800-642-1234, where we'll move through the results that are in and not in, the turnout, the polling, and your reaction. Craig Gilbert is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief. He's covered every presidential campaign since 1988. He's chronicled Wisconsin's role as a swing state. Craig, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's nice to be with you.
So one analyst said we can look at this race through the frame of movement, momentum, and money. Starting with movement, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was the front runner heading into Super Tuesday. Where does he stand now?
I think he stands as one of the two candidates that has, you know, the clearest path to the nomination. I think he's no longer the front runner based on Super Tuesday, in which a lot more states voted than the early states, which kind of in which he carved out a front runner status. But it was a disappointing night for him, even though he had some notable victories, particularly California. He had a chance. There was sort of like a scenario after the early states in which he could really solidify himself as the front runner, open up a delegate lead, and kind of make it difficult for anyone to catch him. That didn't happen. We don't know what the delegate count's going to look like after Super Tuesday, but I think Joe Biden, you know, given, you know, the sheer number of states he won and the fact that they didn't just come in the South, but also came in different regions of the country, is the closest thing we have to a front runner right now.
Well, here is Sanders speaking last night in his home state of Vermont.
And when we began this race for the presidency, everybody said it couldn't be done. But tonight, I tell you with absolute confidence, we are going to win the Democratic nomination.
So, Craig Gilbert, what would Sanders need to do next to secure that nomination?
Well, I mean, there's the delegate math, and then there's just sort of like the overall, you know, you talked about movement and momentum, the overall kind of psychology and climate of the race. In terms of the delegate math, I mean, you know, I think people have heard this 1,000 times. Because the Democratic Party allocates its delegates proportionally in these states, not only based on statewide results, but based on, you know, congressional district level results, the delegate counts tend to be kind of fragmented. And it's hard when there's no winner-take-all contests to really, you know, win big delegate victories in any individual state. So that has kind of a double-edged effect. I mean, one effect is that it's harder for somebody to carve out a lead in the delegate count, but it's also harder once we have a front runner who does have a lead, even if it's not a big lead, it's harder for the people behind that front runner to catch up. So there's a big difference between, you know, when the dust settles on Super Tuesday, are the candidates going to be neck and neck in the delegate count? Is Joe Biden going to be 50 to 100 delegates ahead? You know, was Bernie Sanders going to be ahead? Those are important differences, even if they're small differences, because of the way the delegate math works. But when it comes to the overall sort of feel of the race and the picture of the race, obviously you've got, that's where sort of momentum enters into the picture, expectations, disappointments, and in that sense, you know, what Bernie Sanders would need to do is obviously get some wins, and I think a lot of people are going to be focused next week on Michigan for a whole bunch of reasons that we can talk about.
Yeah, momentum. Don't get ahead of me here on this theme. Talking with Craig Gilbert, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief, we're looking at the results from Super Tuesday and what they mean. What do you think of the results? What surprised you? Is your favorite or least favorite candidate still in the race? Tell us who you're pulling for. for, and which candidates do you think still have a chance of winning the nomination? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So looking at momentum now with former Vice President Joe Biden, we didn't really see this 7 days ago, but he just really pulled out a number of delegates in sweeping the South. Here he is speaking last night in California.
Just a few days ago, the press and the pundits had declared the campaign dead. And then came South Carolina, and they had something to say about it. And we're told, well, when he got to Super Tuesday, it'd be over. Well, it may be over for the other guy.
So what kind of path does he secure going forward? And what happened in the Biden camp last night?
Well, it was a huge night for Joe Biden. You know, it's hard to even talk about, you know, expectations and surprises because our frame of reference is changing so rapidly in this race. I mean, if a week ago this would have been unthinkable. After his big victory in South Carolina on Saturday, the expectation set in that he would have a bunch of victories, but maybe just in these southern states where African American voters are a huge share of the Democratic electorate, and that's a big part of his base of support. And then, then he did even better than that because he made inroads in other parts of the country. I mean, just the fact that, you know, winning Massachusetts and Minnesota, those are huge surprises. A better night than he could have possibly expected. I mean, one of the things we wondered about after Saturday was whether there was enough time for his victory in South Carolina to kind of give him real effective momentum in Super Tuesday. And obviously it did, combined with the individual decisions that Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg made to both withdraw and endorse him, that kind of created this, you know, helped fuel this momentum that we saw on Tuesday.
Well, let's take a call now. Travis in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Travis. What are your thoughts day after?
Oh, good morning. I guess I wish they wouldn't have endorsed either one of the main two front candidates. And I wish they would have just kept going because I think they offer us a better chance in a better future than the current status quo that's running right now. That's all that's left, basically.
Travis, thanks for your thoughts. Travis, disappointed that Senator Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg dropped out at this point. Craig?
Yeah, I mean, it always happens in these races that retrospectively, you know, people wonder, well, did that candidate get out too soon or not soon enough? I mean, certainly all the second guessing on the Republican side 4 years ago among Republicans that didn't want Donald Trump about the fact that other candidates in the race didn't get out quickly enough and didn't try to consolidate against Trump. That didn't happen. Did happen in the Democratic race this time around, but there are still people wondering whether, hey, you know, if Kamala Harris or Cory Booker had stayed in the race, would they be a factor now? People may ask the same things about Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, but I think Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg realized they really didn't have a path forward, and it was obviously their decision to endorse. Now, endorsements don't always matter. It could have been the case that they endorsed Joe Biden and nobody cared, but I think what happened in this case is you had a block of Democratic voters in a lot of these states that weren't sold on Bernie Sanders, either on his politics or his electability, and they've been shopping around for an alternative, and they ended up with Biden because these other two were off the table, and they started thinking that Biden was the one that could do it.
We have the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief, veteran political reporter Craig Gilbert at our side this hour, bringing us morning after analysis on Super Tuesday, where a third of all delegates for the Democratic nomination were at stake. Is your favorite or least favorite candidate still in the race? Join in with your reaction to Super Tuesday, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're dissecting last night's Super Tuesday results, gathering up all the takeaways here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. Former Vice President Joe Biden swept southern states, and we saw that the results show it's increasingly a battle between Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And there's been talk about a contested or brokered Democratic convention. Really rare stuff, but that's what would need to happen if no single candidate emerges with 1,991 delegates. Are you concerned that Democrats will have difficulty uniting around a candidate? What will you think of the party's chance if no candidate has amassed a majority of delegates by July? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us all things Super Tuesday at WPR Mornings. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert is our guide. So, Craig, let's take a moment here and look at African-American voters and the Latino vote. What did you see there, both in the southern states and in California?
So, clearly, African-American voters, you know, provided Joe Biden with a huge boost, both Saturday in South Carolina and Tuesday. In the Super Tuesday states, in many southern states, he was getting more than half the African-American vote. Now, in California, I believe the exit polls were showing him at a lower level in the 30s. So there's some variation from state to state. But overall, that's obviously a huge and probably the most important part of his political base, because, again, in many states, it's in some states, it's more than half the Democratic electorate in the southern states. And in other states, it's just, you know, it's just a very big and important factor. The Latino vote is emerging as part of Bernie Sanders' base of support. It's one reason why he's doing better in the West than he is in some other parts of the country. And so that's been a factor for him. It helped him in Nevada. It helped him in California. I think it helped him in Texas. Again, there's some variation from state to state, but he's winning the Latino vote. I think he's done a lot of groundwork, laid the groundwork for that for a long time. So this is part of these kind of competing coalitions that we're seeing with the top two contenders.
Yeah. How important are these coalitions in order to secure a nomination?
So I think we saw the classic example of this in 2008, when we had this long two-person race between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and when you have two candidates that have kind of clearly defined and different coalitions, it means that A, they both have a foundation of support which allows them, which gives them staying power, and B, it also means that, you know, the shifts from state to state, because each state has a different political makeup, you know, advantages one candidate in some states and the other candidate in other states. So as you go from state to state, or if you have multiple states voting on the same day, you have this kind of standoff effect where, you know, nothing much is really changing in the coalitions, but it translates into victories for one candidate in some places and for the other candidate in other places.
Well, let's take another call now. Oh, I'm sorry. Our caller is gone. But let's look at the third theme here that we were talking about. And after movement momentum, there's money. We saw former Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who, you know, won caucus in American Samoa, got a few dozen delegates after spending a ton of money on the race, hundreds of millions of dollars. He was the only candidate to have ad buys in all 14 states voting. Did that money translate, Craig?
Well, no. I mean, it translated initially into sort of putting him on the map and making him a potential factor. And we saw his rise in the national polls. And we even saw in some of the states where early votes were cast that it had some impact. But you know, money isn't everything. That's been one of the great lessons of this campaign and of other campaigns. I mean, it's not money alone. And when Mike Bloomberg performed badly in his first debate, I think that really sealed his fate. And I think it would have and could have been a very different story. And that's clearly a big reason, you know, a huge development for Joe Biden was sort of Mike Bloomberg kind of flaming out in that debate, because he was a threat to kind of cut into into Joe Biden's base of support among moderates. Money has been an interesting theme in this election. You've got Bernie Sanders, who's raised a lot of money through small donors, and I think that's a reflection of his political strength. But then you've got the limitations of self-funding, even when you have all the money in the world, when the candidate can't translate that money into popular support. And then you've got Joe Biden, who, you know, an establishment, unquote, quote-unquote candidate, who really didn't have a lot of money in the end, and he ended up winning in states on Tuesday where he didn't spend any time or spend any money.
Hmm. Talking with Craig Gilbert, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief, we're going through Super Tuesday results with your insights along the way. Are you pleased former Vice President Joe Biden came out of Super Tuesday ahead? Do these early contests influence your primary vote? And what are you thinking are your core issues that you're voting around? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Craig, let's look at Senator Elizabeth Warren last night, lost her home state of Massachusetts. What is the next stage for this campaign? What are we seeing out of her?
Well, I mean, you're hearing she's under some pressure by Sanders supporters to withdraw. The Sanders people have watched, you know, the moderates kind of coalesce behind Joe Biden and more moderate candidates get out of the race to make way for Joe Biden. And they're saying to themselves, well, you know, why can't we do that on the progressive side? And so, you know, they see Liz Warren and they see her as cutting into Bernie Sanders' base of support. Now, I think it's a little more complicated than that, because I don't think there's a total overlap between her vote and the Bernie Sanders vote. There, she has supporters that wouldn't necessarily migrate to Bernie Sanders, even though she's closer to Bernie Sanders in her politics than she is to some of the other candidates in the race. So she's got a, you know, I don't know what she's going to do. I mean, she had a very disappointing night, particularly, you know, her finish in her home state of Massachusetts. So I think she has to make a decision about, you know, what kind of role she wants to play. It doesn't look like she has a path to the nomination, but maybe she wants to soldier on and gather delegates and play a role at the convention, particularly if it's a potential contested convention. We'll just have to wait and see.
Help us do some delegate math for us, if you could. So with the candidates who dropped out in the last week, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and then Tom Steyer as well. So what happens to their delegates now?
Well, they're pledged delegates to those candidates. And, you know, different states have different rules governing some of this. But, you know, in the end, we're not talking about very many delegates.
Okay.
You know, they got out so early, and they didn't really, you know, they didn't really corral very many delegates. So I don't think that's going to be a major factor in the end. There's right now, I think just on Super Tuesday alone, we're talking about a third of the delegates being allocated. And now we're up to about 38% overall. So we still have more than 60% of the delegates to be allocated. And you know, Buttigieg and Warren are going to end up with a pretty tiny percentage of that.
All right. Well, let's bring in Russ in Manitowoc. Hi, Russ.
Yeah, good morning. See, my question is in reference with Joe Biden. I find it a little unusual at this point that Barack Obama hasn't stepped up and mentioned the fact that his endorsement for Biden. I was wondering, is that because he thinks maybe there's a lack of presidential material there? Or maybe just a strategy for the overall Democratic Party? That's my question.
Russ, thanks. Craig, what insights do you have there about the role that that Obama is playing?
Yeah, I just think he's chosen not to, you know, try to crown the next nominee and let that process play out. And I don't think that's a shocking decision, even though he obviously, Joe Biden served as his vice president for 8 years. Maybe he'll come in and endorse at a critical later stage of the process. I don't necessarily think so, but I think he's just decided not to play that role. And I think it's also a double-edged role, too, because, you know, if Bernie Sanders ends up losing this contest, then the challenge for the Democratic Party is going to be to try to consolidate as much of his support base going into November against Donald Trump as it possibly can. And you don't want his supporters feeling like this has been sort of a top-down effort to deny him the nomination, which, and big name endorsements can have that effect. So I think it's a tricky balancing act for leaders in the party.
And in the wake of the Russian meddling in the election, perhaps that might be an influence as well?
Well, I just think there's a lot of, you know, that's the climate we're in. There's a lot of conspiracy theories. There's a lot of, maybe, you know, whether you think it's healthy skepticism or whether you think it's paranoia, part of this is sort of just a contest for legitimacy. And you want people, certainly in your own party, to feel like the result was legitimate.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason, and the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel's veteran political reporter Craig Gilbert is explaining why the most consequential day of primary season, more than a third of all convention delegates were pledged, with Biden and Sanders separating themselves from the pack. If your candidate dropped out, who are you considering now? Are you voting for the candidate who you think is most electable or the one who most represents your values? We're at 800-642-1234. We have more with Craig Gilbert right after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're breaking down Super Tuesday results here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It was a dramatic point in the race yesterday, with former Vice President Joe Biden surging, becoming the moderate candidate who can challenge Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. So which candidates still have a shot at winning the nomination? Do you think the Democratic Party is headed toward a brokered convention? And if so, how should the party handle it? What issues matter to you most in the election? There's room for you on this Super Tuesday Rewind. We're at 800-642-1234. And Craig Gilbert is our guide. He's the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel's Washington bureau chief, and he's covered every presidential campaign since 1988. Craig, does that feel like it dates you enough? I just keep
that,
like, rubbing it in. No.
I'm at the point where I just have to own it.
So. You just got to own it. It's good. So, you know, Wisconsin holds its primary on April 7th, about a month from now. By that point, roughly two-thirds of the delegates are awarded across the country. How significant do you think will be in the whole national scene, the national race at that moment?
So it's fun to speculate about. You just got to admit up front that we have no idea what's going to happen between now and then. And so things can just turn on a dime, per the last week. I do think that this increases the odds that the primary will be meaningful, because the one scenario, the most likely scenario, which might have resulted in a totally anticlimactic Wisconsin primary, was Bernie Sanders, after doing well in the early primary states, having a big Super Tuesday and carving out an insurmountable delegate lead. And that scenario was ended on Super Tuesday. So now you've got, you know, even with Joe Biden as the potential front runner, you've got Bernie Sanders as a contender who has a pretty solid, entrenched base of support and the ability to soldier on. So even if Joe Biden continues his run, which is by no means guaranteed, I mean, Joe Biden has shown that he's, you know, an up and down candidate, and he could have stumbles. But let's say he continues to be the front runner. Let's say he maintains a small delegate lead. But meaningful delegate lead, then Wisconsin could play the role of, you know, Bernie Sanders' last stand, or it could play a bigger role. It could just be a showdown between two candidates with the nomination, up for grabs. And so we don't know. I mean, but traditionally, Wisconsin has mattered. It hasn't necessarily been a kingmaker, but I think there's a good chance it'll be a meaningful primary, and I think Tuesday increased those chances.
Let's bring in Sheila now with thoughts. Sheila from Wisconsin Rapids. Good morning.
Good morning. So my question is, why don't all the primaries and caucuses across the nation happen on the same day, so that everybody has equal, I guess, opportunities to vote for who they would prefer? So right now, There have been many, many candidates that have dropped out of the race, and we haven't even gotten close to our primary date yet.
Sheila, great question. Craig, why this cascade across the country?
Well, lots of reasons. One reason is that nobody controls the process. I mean, this is, you know, in America, we, you know, states do their own thing. And so there is no sort of top-down stranglehold on how this process is done. So some of it is just sort of by tradition, and some of it is individual states just doing their own thing. And these individual states have their own elections at different points in time. I mean, the Wisconsin primary occurs on the Wisconsin election calendar. It's not, you know, it would cost a lot of money to have that primary election on a different date, but this is the date where Wisconsin already holds, you know, its April election. So that's one reason. I think there's also just sort of a general feeling within the parties that having like a simultaneous 50-state primary, you'd be giving up some things. I mean, these nominating contests are obviously imperfect in lots of ways, and there's lots of totally legitimate debates to be had about the sequencing of the states and which states go first and how representative they are, and those debates are ongoing. But I think the idea of having a sequential process, I think, has a fair amount of support within the party, because what you see is it's a test. It's a test of the candidates. I mean, you go from state to state. People's strengths and weaknesses are kind of on the table and under a microscope. And so I think there's a feeling that there is some value to having a process where it's sequential, as opposed to just having everybody vote at once.
And having it very condensed.
Yeah, and also it does permit for candidates that don't go into the process with name recognition and money to try to elbow their way into contention. You know, famously, Jimmy Carter did it in 1976. You couldn't do that if you had all the states voting at once.
Let's bring in Mark now in Appleton. Hi, Mark. What are your thoughts on Super Tuesday?
Hello. Well, here's my concern. I think that Bernie was bringing in a lot of new young voters, a lot of excited voters, progressive ideas. And now we might be centering in on the idea of, well, who is most like Hillary Clinton that we can nominate as a Democrat against Donald Trump? I think it's a legitimate concern.
Mark, thanks for those thoughts. Craig sees a lot of overlap with Hillary Clinton.
Well, I mean, certainly when you look at their age and you know, their stature in that kind of sense, there are some parallels. But, you know, we'll never know if Bernie Sanders would have done better than Hillary Clinton in 2016. You know, a lot of people, some people might think so. I'm not convinced. And we'll never know if Joe Biden is nominated, whether Bernie Sanders would have been a stronger candidate against Donald Trump or vice versa. I mean, certainly Bernie Sanders' argument has been that, you know, his electability argument has been, I'm going to mobilize people that otherwise might not vote. Now, there's been some pushback on that during the primaries because, you know, the evidence that he's mobilizing lots of new young voters is mixed. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, some of the states where we saw a big surge in the vote in the Democratic primary were places like Virginia, which was kind of a blowout win for Joe Biden. So the surge came more from, you know, like suburbanites than it did from young voters. So it's not a clear-cut case, and these electability debates, you know, are just really impossible to settle.
Talking with Craig Gilbert, who writes about politics, about polarization, voting trends for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where breaking down Super Tuesday results, what they mean going forward for the Democratic nomination. And you can join in with your thoughts on Super Tuesday at 800-642-1234. What issues are most important to you in this election? Are you voting for the candidate that you think is most electable or the one who most represents your values? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Sarah in Madison, called in to say that they're super disappointed at how Senator Elizabeth Warren did. Sarah also says they're feeling scared about the number of friends who are angry about the Super Tuesday results and may not vote in November. What are we looking for there as we look at the tenor of the country and how people are feeling heading into the fall, Craig?
So a lot of raw emotions. I mean, throughout this whole process, for a whole variety of reasons, obviously there are a lot of emotions surrounding President Trump and attitudes toward President Trump. And then within the Democratic Party, you've got, you know, divisions and fault lines, and it gets very personal sometimes. But this is nothing new. I mean, in the Obama-Clinton, you know, they drag out, knock down, fight for the nomination in 2008, and then certainly Sanders-Clinton in 2016. And you know, every election cycle, there are some people who vote for a candidate, whether it's in the Republican primary or the Democratic primary, and then don't end up voting for that party's nominee in the fall. That happens in every election. The question is it, you know, is that fall off bigger than normal? And is it bigger on one side than on the other side? I mean, it happened on both sides in 2016. I mean, there were Bernie Sanders voters in the primary that didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, that a few of them might have voted for Donald Trump, and then some of them stayed home. But the same thing happened on the Republican side with supporters of the other Republican candidates that didn't like Donald Trump. So it's, you know, I understand the emotions and I understand the fears, and it could turn out to be a real thing, and it could turn out to be decisive in the election. But it's all, people have to remember that this does happen in every election cycle, and obviously it's sort of the job of the party, whoever wins, to kind of try to mend those fences and kind of maximize their vote in November.
To unify there. So states will finish voting by June. Milwaukee hosts the Democratic National Convention in July. So if no candidate has a clear majority of delegates by that point, what does the convention look like?
Well, so there's a couple of different scenarios. I mean, there's certainly a very real chance that no candidate will go into the convention with the majority of pledged delegates, but that doesn't mean we won't have a de facto nominee. You know, if somebody, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, has a pretty clear lead in the delegate count, pledged delegate count, even if they're short of 50%, you know, the chances of the convention denying that person the nomination, I think, are fairly small, just because it would be seen as a very undemocratic thing to do, and it would produce the kind of revolt or the kind of alienation that we've been talking about. So there's a big difference between, you know, somebody going in short of a majority but having a clear lead in the delegate count, between that and a scenario where nobody's got a majority but the top two contenders are really, really close in their delegate count. And then you could have a contested convention where it really does come down to a vote of the pledged delegates on the first ballot, and if there is no winner on the first ballot, the unpledged delegates, the so-called superdelegates, can vote on the second ballot. And there, you know, it becomes more of a free-for-all, because you wouldn't have, if you don't have one candidate seen as being the more legitimate, having the more legitimate claim to the nomination going in, then it truly is a wide-open convention. Now, the chances of that happening are not great, but it's certainly not implausible.
We'll talk about superdelegates in a moment with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's veteran political reporter. Craig Gilbert is at our side as we unpack Super Tuesday results, look at how it's reshaped the race. Former Vice President Joe Biden's performance included decisive wins across the South, a surge that we saw in his campaign. Still time for your reaction to Super Tuesday results. We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment for more political analysis, maybe hear from you here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're rewinding on Super Tuesday. We saw a significant turning point for Democrats in the 2020 presidential election, a treasure trove of delegates. Craig Gilbert is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Teresa is joining us from Madison with thoughts. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I guess I just wanted to share that I'm feeling really hopeful after Super Tuesday. More than anything, although my preferred candidate isn't necessarily performing at the top and may end up, and that would be Warren, I am extremely encouraged, and I think that's the energy that I'm seeing, that the civility of how we move forward as a party and how we really go into, you know, the convention, et cetera, and how we coalesce around whoever that candidate is just leaves me really hopeful, regardless if it's my candidate or not. I just think that the polarization politically feels so isolating, and right now Democrats are just seeming to pull it together, like whether it's Bloomberg going to back whoever, folks dropping out but deciding they're going to endorse someone. That's just hopeful to me, irregardless if it's my candidate.
Teresa, thanks so much for those reflections there. Craig, Teresa sees democracy in action.
Well, sure. I mean, this is a messy democratic process, and some people see kind of chaos and confusion, and some people see the beauty of democracy. I mean, the one thing that, you know, often the most unifying force in on either side is the other side. And we saw that in 2016 when Donald Trump, you know, was unpopular with a lot of Republican voters, but Republican voters were kind of unified in their animus toward Hillary Clinton. And we may see the same thing in 2020. I mean, Donald Trump is having and will have and continue to have a tremendous unifying effect on Democratic voters. That we've seen that in the role that electability has played in the nominating process. And so, you know, the thing that will likely bring them together more than anything else is the desire to unseat Donald Trump from the White House. And so that that will operate no matter who the nominee is. It doesn't mean that some nominees aren't going to be stronger than others. But in the end, that's why, you know, most Republican voters vote Republican and most Democratic voters vote Democratic.
Well, let's get thoughts here from Matt in Madison. Hi, Matt. What did you see on Super Tuesday? Hi.
Well, I'm a Republican, so I like watching the other side to see who the potential rivals are going to be on Election Day. And I'm actually fairly happy with the way this is shaping up. I think that if Bernie Sanders becomes the nominee, Trump is a shoo-in for election. I think the socialist platform is not going to ring well with moderates and independents, and that's going to be enough to push Trump over. And if Biden is the nominee, I think he just seems to be having mental health issues when you watch his debates. He's making a lot of elementary mistakes. And I think that in any debate with Trump, he's going to get eaten up, and that's going to be presented in a brighter light. Warren worries me a little bit more because she is a new player to the field and brings a different dynamic. I was more worried about Pete Buttigieg because he had a very different and a young, energetic personality to him. And I think that may have swung more Republicans to vote for somebody else. So I'm actually happy the way this is shaping up, and I think it's going to go good for Trump in 2020.
Matt, thanks for painting this picture for us. Craig, what are your insights there? What do you see in Matt's observations?
Well, I think what I see is, you can argue this any way you want to, and if you see, you know, you can see sort of the greatest potential, you know, in one candidate and overlook their flaws and imagine them as the most electable Democrat, or you could do that with another candidate. And so, you know, people who think Joe Biden is the most electable Democrat, you know, are thinking about his political strengths, you know, which include, you know, this sort of history with the party, kind of a sense of safety and security, not too radical, you know, Obama vice president experience, return to normalcy. But they may be overlooking, you know, his political weaknesses. He's been a very uneven candidate, and he doesn't have a history of winning a national election, certainly. But you can go through the same exercise with every one of these Democrats. I mean, you can imagine you can focus on Bernie's strengths and you can overlook his weaknesses. The caller was sort of focusing on Pete Buttigieg's and Elizabeth Warren's potential strengths as candidates, but they also have weaknesses. So that's why this is a hard argument to settle and one that will never be settled because we'll never know the counterfactual in the end of what would have happened if this other candidate had been the nominee. And there is no perfect nominee.
Craig, let's pause here for a moment and look at the polling that's come out, the polling that you've seen. There's been variance in Wisconsin polls over the past month. But, you know, Marquette and UW polls both found Biden and Sanders beating President Trump. What are you seeing out of the polls?
So let me just start out with the big caveat that these polls really don't answer the question. I mean, obviously they're snapshots. Obviously they change. I mean, Donald Trump looked unelectable in the polling at this stage of the process 4 years ago. So they just, you know, you can take little hints from them, but they're not definitive about, certainly not definitive about who's going to win in November, and not even definitive about who is the most electable Democrat against Trump. In the polling, you know, I would say, like, if you look at the Marquette polling over the winter until the most recent poll, Joe Biden was performing the best pretty clearly among the Democratic candidates in hypothetical matchups with Donald Trump in a general election. That changed in the most recent poll, in which Bernie Sanders actually did a couple of points better than Joe Biden in his matchup with Trump. Joe Biden, more often than not, has been ahead of Trump, but there have been some polls where Trump has been ahead of him and also the other Democrats. So I would say overall the polling paints a very competitive picture. There have been some outlier polls, but I would say overall the polling tells you what you would expect, which is that Wisconsin is very much a state in play. There aren't dramatic differences between how different Democrats perform, but you know, it wouldn't take a very dramatic difference to be the margin between victory and defeat in November.
Talking with Craig Gilbert, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington bureau chief. Let's bring another call now. Mike is here from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I want Bernie Sanders to be president and Elizabeth Warren to be vice president. Is that feasible?
I would be surprised. I mean, you know, I would be surprised only because, you know, we're used to thinking about, and it doesn't always work out this way, but we're used to thinking about this, the process of choosing a running mate as kind of a balancing act, whether you're trying to achieve geographic balance or ideological balance or gender balance or racial balance. Certainly that will be a consideration on the Democratic side. So if Bernie Sanders were the nominee and he chose Elizabeth Warren as his running mate, it would be kind of be doubling down on the politics of having a very progressive ticket, which is risky. I think most Democrats think it's risky. I mean, especially those Democrats that think there is a, you know, there's a danger. There are electability questions around Bernie Sanders. You're sort of doubling down on a ticket, you know, in that way. And so there's some uncertainty there. But at the same time, you know, if Bernie Sanders were the nominee, you wouldn't necessarily expect him to pick a candidate that represents, you know, a totally different brand of politics. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. Again, in the hypothetical, if Bernie Sanders is the nominee, if Joe Biden is the nominee, does he pick somebody from the more progressive side of the party? He would pick somebody younger by definition. I think both these candidates are going to pick somebody younger, which is another part of the balancing act. When all the candidates that remain are in their 70s, you're going to see some age balancing in the ticket no matter what happens.
Well, it sounds like, Craig, you have your work cut out for you. There's a lot to watch in the coming weeks and months.
Well, it's fun to talk about. It'll continue to be fun to talk about. It's going to be a wild ride to Milwaukee in July and Wisconsin at the forefront of the fall campaign.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Craig Gilbert is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington bureau chief. And if you missed, by the way, any part of this analysis on Super Tuesday, you can listen to the show in its entirety at wpr.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.